1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice One toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or Star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good afternoon and welcome to Soundbites. I am Nick Francesco.
And I am Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And on the buttons we have reticent Rob Litton, who is
He's a trained professional.
Yeah, you too.
As opposed to me, apparently.
We're going
to
be taking your phone calls at the numbers you just heard a moment ago, but I'll even repeat them. 222-1180 if you're in the 585 area code. If you're outside at 800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free line, or if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, Star 1180. But before we do that, we're going to go to the news, and we're going to start with Steve because he was actually ready.
Well, sort of.
Got him.
A couple of news agencies. Geez, we're all doing it today.
Oh my goodness.
Are reporting some critical flaws have been found in Office for the Mac and in IE for the Mac. Basically, a lot of the security issues that have plagued the PC world for a while are now starting to show up in the Mac versions of the same programs. Microsoft is working on fixes. In fact, they just released a security update for IE for OS 10, and also. The Office 10 Service Pack 1, and I believe they were doing Office 2001 Service Pack 2. So Microsoft is starting to patch the holes again, too. Basically, it's they're calling it the Angry Packet Security. who knows? I guess non-angry packets are okay. But it's basically it allows someone to write a shell code to get into your computer and take over most of the low-level functioning. So it's a potential problem, so you want to go, if you're running Internet Explorer, or Office, so you want to go to the Microsoft website and download the patches.
Okay, excellent. Thanks. And I know that you're about to talk about your favorite subject, viruses.
Yeah. There's another one, Klez. It's just come out with a different flavor. You know, these kids can't develop their own viruses. Not that I encourage them to do anyways, but they'll sit there and make an alteration to it. So Klez has been moved up to a low-risk virus to a medium-risk virus, along with Love Letter. Matter of fact, I just had one client that had 9,323, a new record set at NRIPC Management for the most viruses deleted off a machine. We can't say it enough, folks. You have to stay up to date with your antivirus programs. The other thing I was a little discouraged about, and we were talking about just before, is the way the Supreme Court there, more or less as far as child porn. I mean, I just had a machine into my shop that I had to turn over to the Sheriff's Department again because of the child porn. Sorry, whether it's cartoon or live or whatever, I have a zero tolerance for it. I think they made the wrong step in that direction. I'm sorry. You know, there's plenty of other adult porn that, you know, not that I'm into it anyways, but, you know, that if folks want it, they can do it. But the minute it starts getting into kids, I'm sorry, that's where I draw the line. Just like that lady that called in from Pittsburgh Library there.
Yep.
She's got a right to be upset about it, and they should do something about it.
Yeah, they should. We're going to go back to computer news, though, for a moment.
And I'd like to talk about computer related.
That's exactly right. And there's, I hope you're all sitting down, because there's been another hole found in Microsoft's Internet Explorer.
Wow.
Unbelievable, isn't it? This one's a hard one, your back button. Yes, when users hit the back button on Internet Explorer's toolbar, the browser's security settings for the Internet Zone can be bypassed, and the browser will automatically execute malicious code embedded into a site's URL. This problem is caused by what can politely be described as a design flaw in Explorer.
Or a feature.
When a web page fails to load, Explorer will display that standard error message. You've seen that. Can't find the page. Gives you a...
Try again later.
Gives you a little box to retype it in with a little find, with a little magnifying glass, and it tells you all that stuff. Okay. Unfortunately, this message, by default, and you can't change it, operates in the local computer zone security setting, which is basically everything goes. And by default, that allows scripting to run automatically. So if a code, a malicious code, was inserted in the original URL, if you originally went to that site, it would be stopped if you had your security settings set high enough. Well, if you get to this can't find it page and back up one, it gets run as if you were still in the local security area. And so whatever malicious JavaScript or whatever will automatically be run. Lots of users hit the back button whenever a web page fails to load. And so this is an incredibly huge hole. Microsoft has said that they may address it in the next patch update thing that they do, but they don't believe it's a big deal right now.
They'll probably attach it to the AnyKey.
There's also a general security issue with the back button if you're on a public computer or a computer that you share in your house. If you've gone to a banking site or something like that, and then you go past it and go on to other pages, someone could come up to your computer, hit the back button enough, get back to your account information, and start doing things.
Right. You should always use the log off button if there is one, which wipes out your cookie on your machine so you're not logged in anymore.
Well, I think most of them wind up, most of the libraries know that the history is set to zero.
If you've started a session and you walk away and somebody else hits the back button, they're in your session.
And most of the banking software I've seen, at least, will time out after a while.
Well, I'm sorry.
Someone can exploit that.
I have a problem with anybody going to the library to do their banking anyway.
Well, yes, there is that. But even in dorm room students, if you don't remember to log off and somebody walks up to your computer, they own your account. It's done.
Yep.
It's a done deal. So, folks,
I used to do that. Have that happen in college, with the system administrator would walk off and leave the privileged admin account open.
Then he or she deserves whatever they got.
In fact, he accidentally himself deleted VMS on our VAC system.
Excellent.
He forgot he was in the privileged account and
never did it. Never work is root. Never work is root.
Well, we got a moment here. I should we should put in a plug that this Thursday,
that's
from
right,
11 to 2 o'clock, folks, if you've got nothing better to do and wanted to be entertained, come on down to the Soho Show at the Convention Center. Nick, Steve, and I are going to be there and meet and greet folks. So
from 11 to 2.
They're actually letting us out of the studio and amongst the living there. And
we'll probably have collars or ankle chains, but we'll be there. So if you're available, come down to the Soho Show Thursday, April 25th. We'll be there from 11 to 2 at the Rochester Riverside Convention Center. Right now, however, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, me, Nick on Sound Bites only on 1180 WHAM. It's absolutely true. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And Rob Linton is on the buttons. We don't lie to you here at Sound Bites. We are who we say we are. Our first caller today, we believe, and we're willing to believe this, is Jeff from Ontario. Welcome, Jeff. What's your question?
Oh, guy.
Jeff?
Yes.
Are you there?
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
Okay, talk to us now.
Talking to my wife.
That's okay.
Put her on hold.
Yeah. I'm the one who called last night and got a brain freeze, remember, on my second question?
Oh, yeah. What's up?
Yeah. On the same computer, all of a sudden it started slow booting up, recognizing the hard drive and the CD-ROMs.
Mm-hmm.
But once it does, it's fine. It just takes quite a while.
Where is this computer stored? Down the basement?
Yeah.
And is it pretty cold down there?
No, 65, 70 degrees.
Not bad, but yeah, if you've got a board, and it can get kind of chilly in there that needs to warm up, especially if the electronics and everything else are, damp and everything else, could have a factor into it.
Are you getting any error message or it just sits there?
Nope, it just sits there.
Does the hard drive light blink?
Yes.
So it's trying to access the hard drive and can't?
It might just have a trouble spinning up with the servo motor in it, and same with a CD-ROM, especially down in the basement. They're a little, damp, a little more moisture content and everything else down there than the average, room upstairs. So that can have a factor. You might want to try moving it, if you can, upstairs for a little while and see if that makes any difference.
Okay.
Or possibly a dehumidifier to cut down on the humidity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, one more quick question. I remember it this time. I have a laptop and with Windows XP, and for some reason it doesn't recognize the network or the Internet. I have Roadrunner, and then all of a sudden it does, sporadically.
How much memory do you have in it?
256.
When are you sharing this off of some sort of router?
Yes.
Okay. So it's not finding the router. It's not doing anything.
I even connected directly to the modem. It doesn't even find it.
Oh, did XP come on this laptop, or did you put it on
it? It was an upgrade.
When you did that, did it have any troubles?
Finding the network.
What I'm thinking is that it's not using exactly the right driver for the network card. That happens an incredibly large number of times with
XP as an upgrade. That's standard for XP right now.
My suggestion is that you go to the website of whoever made that network card and see if there is an updated driver for Windows XP.
A lot of times what happens is Windows will see the generic chipset. Oh, you have a DEC Ethernet card
or
a TI Ethernet card. And that's not enough. It needs to know you have a Zircom X427A.
Right. And so what you need to do is to go up to the website of the manufacturer of your internet card, the little piece.
Or if it's built into the manufacturer of the board.
Right, it's on the board.
Right, then you need to go to the manufacturer of your laptop, see if there's an updated driver specifically for that model laptop. Don't accept no substitutes.
Right, yeah, I understand.
Yeah, and download that and install it. That is most likely what the problem
is. Okay, we'll do that. You guys are brilliant.
Thank you very much. It's what we like to hear.
See ya.
Thank you. We're going to go to our next brilliant caller, Howard.
Hey, guys, how are you doing today?
Peachy, how are you?
Not too bad, thanks. Quick question. Windows 98 second edition, I switched over to DSL in the process of doing all that. I got an inter-network password when I start.
Mm-hmm. Hello?
You still there?
Yeah.
Yeah, I pulled my headset out.
Well, that would be bad.
I'm back again now.
Okay.
How do I get rid of this at startup so I don't have to...
You just got to go into the control panel, and under networking, you'll see where it says Microsoft networking. Just change it to Windows Logon. It might ask you one more time for a password, but that's the last time you'll ever see it.
But just hit enter both times.
The other issue is that if you are sharing files with other computers on your network,
you
do have a network and
there
need to log into it. Okay.
So just switch the Windows Logon then.
Okay.
All right. And by the way, Nick, on your advice, I switched the Eudora. Very nice.
You're loving it, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm just getting the handle of it now, but...
I love Eudora. Thank you.
Once you get there, thank you.
My pleasure. I love Eudora. Great product. Our next caller is Keith, calling from a car phone parked on the side of the road. Right, Keith?
Yeah, right. With the coffee in the cup holder and the cigarette in the ashtray and my wife's hands to herself.
There you go.
But I do have a headset on.
There you go. That's what I like to hear.
Hey, real quick... I'm Keith with ME, you know, the only guy that bought the upgrade.
Oh, yeah.
I've downgraded, and I picked up an unneeded Windows 98 computer. It was sitting idly, and when I first installed everything on it, I had to reset the time.
Yeah.
Now what's happening, when I turn it off for a couple days, and I go to boot up, it goes to safe mode, and I have to go to one of my security programs that will reload everything from the last time I saved it. Yeah. Is the battery dying that retains the BIOS?
Yeah, that retains the BIOS, but it won't have any effect on the operating system.
Well, but it will if it's old enough machine and it's losing what kind of hard drives it is and the time everything else.
That has nothing to do with the FAT. I mean, all your information...
what is it you're reloading?
Well, when I was out of town for 2 days, I turned everything off. When I come home, I turn it on, and it goes to the startup or the setup menu, and it says, if you don't do anything, it's going to start up in safe mode. So I go to safe mode, and then I went to my some sort of program that captures data. It captures setup stuff, just like the Windows ME does now. Where you can go to, it captures restore points.
Yeah.
And I just went to the last restore point.
Okay.
And it restored everything. But when I turned it on, it didn't go there. It went to safe mode.
What I would suggest you do is do another install of Windows 98 over
itself. It's the second time I did it.
Then it might be, that hard drive might be getting flaky.
I've ran all sorts of diagnostics on the hard drive. even to the extreme of a funnel test on it, which I never heard of.
All right, first thing you want to do is turn it off, open it up, leave it plugged in, touch the power supply to make sure you're grounded, and then check to make sure... Yeah.
Actually, yeah, because the wet will conduct the charge and ground you better.
If that makes you happy, feel free to do whatever you want. But don't keep the coffee and the cigarettes away from it.
Didn't Fermi use his eyelid?
Yes, he did, as a matter of fact. Let's not go there right now, could we please? And then what you want to do is make sure that the power that the data cables are connected tight into the hard drives. If this is a machine you got from somebody, moved it home, jostled it around, it's possible that some of the connectors have gotten loose.
Okay. Also, on the back of it, there's a small little rocker switch. I normally would turn it off from the front.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's a rocker switch on the back.
Right. Yeah, turn that off too.
Right. Some of the computers are coming with a hard power switch on the power supply, and then
the rocker switch.
The rocker switch. The button on the front is soft power that tells the motherboard to engage the power supply.
Right. So you want to turn both off.
Make sure
all the connectors are tight. If they are, then you've got a different problem. And
it's not the battery that retains the BIOS.
Probably not. No. I'm sorry, we got to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco on Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM. We are so back, you wouldn't even believe it. And we're taking your calls right now. We're speaking to Al from Rochester. Welcome, Al. What's your question?
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
All right. Windows XP Professional.
Yeah.
I lost my volume control, my taskbar. And when I go into the control panel to try and set it so that it goes back into the taskbar, it tells me that the volume control's not installed, but the volume control on my keyboard works.
Yeah, that's a different
issue.
Yeah, it's not that the driver's not working. It's that the little applet that does the screen stuff is gone. The driver still works, and the driver's connected to your keyboard.
You might want to try to uninstall the sound card.
And reinstall it.
And also go into the control panel and under... they took that away.
It's a file called sndctrl.cpl. It's a control panel function.
Yep.
And obviously yours is either accidentally deleted or got corrupted. You can try to extract it from the cab files. If you have the original CD or the cabs are on your hard drive.
I have the CD.
Well, if you have WinZip, the latest version of WinZip, mm-hmm. it will read cab files. So you can go through it, find that sound control panel, and extract the one file and put it back and see if that works.
Much what easier than using that extract command to remember the parameters.
Pain in the neck, yeah.
But what if he renames it and then uses SFC? That should find
That's
it.
That's a lovely idea. He
they
could
put
do that
back
too.
Into XP?
FC, yeah. SFC.
They took it out in ME. I guess they thought it was good enough
yeah.
to put it back.
Yeah, right. Yeah, if you just rename it. Just rename the extension mm-hmm. of that file and then just go to start run and type SFC. And it will look for the file that's missing.
If
SFC doesn't work, which is System File Checker, if that doesn't work, and I don't remember if that's in XP, honestly, but...
Yeah, I read it.
All right, then you can also go to Programs, Accessories, Administrative Tools, and run the
System
Information Program, and one of the tools in the tool menu will do that.
What did you say the original name of the file was?
We got to take a break for the bills, but I'll tell you that when we come back. We'll be back in just
Hold
a minute.
Hold on.
Breaking news on Wham 1180. I've got chills up and down my spine right now, or somewhere near my spine. Anyway, before we go to the next call, I want to remind Al that file is called sndctrl.cpl, I think.
Yeah, so if he just renames the extension to right. like txt or cpl underscore,
right.
and then does the SFC, he should find it.
Right, our next caller, Roger from Rochester. Welcome, Roger. What's your question?
Hi. I have a new Compaq Presario 5000 series.
Yeah.
And it's loaded with XP and all this other stuff that came with it. Anyway, I've had trouble with the CD, and I took it in the CD player to read and write.
Mm-hmm.
And they replaced it because the drawer would open when it felt like it and not open and slam your fingers in it and every other damn thing. But anyway, so they replaced that. But my question now is, I still have one disc in particular that it refuses to read, even if I go to the start menu and type the EXE in it. And yet, I have an older, slightly older HP. I stick it in there, and it goes in with absolutely no problem. My wife has an old IBM, about 12 years old when CDs first came out, practically, and I can stick it in there, and it comes up.
Sure.
But it won't come up on a three-week-old computer, and I just don't know why.
Is there an error message, or just sits there grinding away?
No, all it does is it attempts to start up, and then it
sits there and spins,
goes down,
spins.
And then it goes up and down.
How old is the CD itself?
2 years old. It's a...
You might want to look at it for any scratches or dirt on it. You can buy a CD cleaning kit that will clean the CD off. You also might want to look at a CD lens cleaning kit.
But he's reading it in other machines.
Right. What I'm thinking is the older drives, because of their age, might be slightly out of alignment or the older specifications. The new drive might be a 50X or 60X, and it's the drive is running too fast to read an older disc. It might be in some way that was pressed. Was it a commercial disc? Or was it one you burned on an old machine?
No, it's a commercial disc. It's a book. It's Word 2000, the entire book, a 1,400-page book.
I have seen cases where some drives just don't like specific brands of CDs and specific press mastering systems that companies may use to make the CD.
I've seen that happen.
But anyway, the company that put out the is QUE.
Mm-hmm. You might want to give them a call. Tell them that you can't read it in your drive, even though you bought it, and see what they'll do for you.
Yeah, okay.
Do you have a CD writer on one of the older machines?
No.
Yeah, because you could make a copy. Well, if the machines are networked together, you could make a copy of the CD through the network and then burn it on the new computer so you had it on CD.
That's a
and
thought.
And theoretically, if that drive will burn a disc, it should read the disc it just burned.
Right.
Okay. One other quick question?
Sure.
On the HP I was telling you we had, when it boots up, and that computer isn't very old either. That's only 3 years old. It's a HP Pavilion. And what happens is recently I've noticed that when it boots up and the desktop screen comes on, all of a sudden the A drive starts to shake like it's looking for a disk, and then a thin line shoots right down the center of the screen. Sounds like somebody's taking your picture, and then it settles down.
Are you running like Norton?
I have Norton's in it, yeah. I have...
It might be set up to automatically check the A drive. In the settings, you'd have to go in there, and if you don't normally, boot off the floppy or anything like that, you might want to go in and check the settings that tell it not to bother to check the A drive, because that's what it's doing. It's sitting there first automatically, checking the A drive to see if anything's in there, and it keeps going and going and going until it times out.
It could also be that if you have opened a file from a floppy, your Windows recent menu is trying to find that floppy again to rebuild the icon in the recent menu.
Right.
Oh, because this happens, the computer could be off for 2 or 3 days.
That won't matter. If the information is set up for when it reboots, it'll always be there. Until that file disappears from the recent
menu. It really doesn't bother me because it does settle down.
It's probably nothing important. That line going down the center of the monitor probably is just the monitor settling into work. A lot of them do that.
Because it never did it. It does it after the A drive shakes. Yeah. Then all of a sudden it goes... It comes right out of the speakers. It goes as the line goes down.
Yeah, I say, you can always look in your Norton
settings.
That
almost sounds like a joke virus.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. What antivirus software are you running?
It's Windows 98.
No, antivirus software.
Oh, Norton's, it's not Firewall, it's...
Yeah, when
was
the last time you updated it?
Oh...
That was a bad answer already.
It should be yesterday.
Probably about a month ago.
Yeah,
so.
What you need to do is update your antivirus and do a thorough scan of your entire system.
Oh.
And make sure you're updated. I had a client just yesterday said, oh, I update weekly, and he hadn't updated since 1989.
Right.
Oh. He thought he was updating weekly.
Yeah. Check it out. We got to run. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, me, Nick on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Well, I see they didn't fix that one. We're back, and before we get back to the phones, we want to talk a little bit about our website. We do have a website. You can get to it very easy by going to wham1180.com, selecting, go down to the lower left. You'll see our lovely faces. Click on that. You'll see more of about us, and you can click, get to our website at soundbites.org, and from there you can join in all kinds of things. One of the things we do every week is we have a poll. Last week's poll was, when was the last time you mailed a physical letter? As you know, the post office used to be mostly about personal letters. That was their bread and butter, but lately it's become a lot of commercial mail because people aren't sending as many personal letters. So I had a kind of an interesting question as to who's doing what these days, and the poll was, when was the last time you mailed a physical letter? 40% of you answered 44. Of course, and naturally I put this up during the time when everybody's mailing in their taxes, which is not technically, I guess, a bill. So 44 of you voted this week, 32 last week, 27 last year, 23 last month, and 12 earlier this year. Total votes, 229, which is exactly the number we got last week. I want to see that number go up, up, up. So you can vote in this week's poll without even worrying about it. And this week's poll is pretty simple. The question is, what's your favorite form of multimedia? Jim LaGraff sent us this one. And the choices are streaming audio, streaming video, virtual tours, or reading and listening to the stereo. We currently have, I don't have a clue how many, 45 votes. And reading and listening to the stereo seems to be ahead of streaming audio just by a little bit. Please vote in the poll at soundbites.org. And if you have an idea for a better poll, many people in the forums have been saying mine are lame. If you have a better idea, send it to me at pollideas@soundbites.org. That's pollideas@soundbites.org. And speaking of the forums, we do have a set of forums where you can ask questions, get answers, make comments, chit-chat amongst each other. You should register at the forum so that you get all the benefits of membership, changing the theme that you use.
You've done one heck of a job.
Thank you. And you can join those forums right off the main page. When you do, please tell us what city you're from. We'd like to know how far out we're getting and who's joining in. But join the forums. Vote in the poll. We currently have 682 registered users, the latest one being Will74. 46 votes in the poll. We also have a guest book. You're welcome to sign that. And that's all at soundbites.org. But right now, we are going to go back to the telephones. And we are speaking right now to Frank from Greece. Welcome, Frank. What's your question?
Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I have a 3-year-old Gateway computer. And recently had some problems. It was getting sluggish, and I thought maybe it was Norton's internet security. So I uninstalled that and got rid of a few startup things that were automatically starting up by using msconfig.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was on the phone to Gateway, the manufacturer of the machine.
Right.
And they did suggest that maybe I should upgrade, maybe I should increase my memory on the machine. So,
how much did you have in it?
I have, still currently, I have 96 total.
And it's still sluggish?
No, that has improved.
Okay.
But one concern I do have, the lady at the Gateway who is not in a technical capacity, she was more or less in the selling capacity and
right.
shipping and so forth. She says maybe I should increase the memory, and she says available memory should be about 80% or 90%.
Yeah, everybody has a different idea on how much of that should be available, and it really depends on what you're running and what you're doing.
And there is no real way to see what your available memory is.
Right. What you need to do is be run. 96 is okay. 128 meg is probably better was definitely better for Windows 98. Depending on what you're running, if that starts getting a little sluggish again, you could go up to 256. My recommendation is a minimum of 128 meg for Windows 98, a minimum of 256 for Windows XP. But
A minimum of 128 total?
Yes, 128
megabytes
of RAM.
After that, Windows 98 really doesn't take advantage of it unless you're using like Photoshop or a CAD program. Mm-hmm. You'd actually have to have an application that would use anything above 128.
Right.
The other thing to look at is where is it sluggish? It may be that your hard drive is getting full or being fragmented, and so it's taking longer to load files. You might want to go through the disk cleanup procedure to empty out your recycle bin, your temporary internet files, do the defrag procedure in order to cut down on how hard the hard drive has to work to get to the files it's looking for.
Well, we do that fairly regularly, every couple months or whatnot. And like I say, right now it is fine. I'm just wondering if she's just trying to sell me something that I really don't need.
Well, she's trying to sell you something. That's her job. But the reality is that you need it.
And
128 meg is better for Windows 98.
And the amount of memory you have has no bearing on your system resources. System resources are limited to 16K.
Right, there's a 16K window for those things. And the amount of free memory you have in the system, even if you're talking about that 128 meg, that changes. There are programs that will take as much RAM as there is in your system and give back what if you load another program. So that's ridiculous. But more memory means more scratch space, more room for a little more elbow room for stuff.
Now, I have seen she did suggest that I also utilize that little feature called the resource memory, which I found is kind of handy, and
right.
And I have looked at that while running like maybe graphic type programs and
sure.
Games or whatnot, and I have seen a dip down to
sure
as low as 59%.
Sure, and you might see it lower, but that's while you're running a program that takes all of memory because you're doing graphics. The simple answer here, Frank, we can go around and around about this. The simple answer is 128 meg is what you should be running for Windows 98 to get better performance out of it. But beyond that, don't really worry about those little numbers.
Okay.
Okie doke.
All righty. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Our next caller, Paul from Brighton. Welcome, Paul. What's your question?
Hello.
Hi.
I'm calling about an issue about, the graphics cards.
Okay.
Actually, I'm calling about a problem that's come up with a game my son was trying to load.
Mm-hmm.
The motion is real sluggish and the sounds are real garbled.
Right.
Okay. What type of system do you have?
We have a Dell 4100 Dimension system with ME.
Do you know what graphics card you have in it?
Yeah, we have a 32 megabit NVIDIA TNT2M64.
No, that's enough. It's a nice card.
It says APG graphics.
Right.
One of the problems is that there's a couple of different graphic standards that games are writing to. OpenGL, the 3DFX chipset, NVIDIA had a chipset, ATI has a chipset. So a lot of the older games were written for a specific chipset on a specific video card. The OpenGL language is supposed to help a lot of that, so that graphics companies write to OpenGL. The game companies write to OpenGL, and it doesn't matter what card you have.
The other thing you might be running into as far as the game, depending on the resolution that you're running, a lot of these games like to be running in 640 by 480, maybe 256 colors. If you've got it 1024 by 768 or higher, you might be running into issues there, and you might want to consider lowering
the number of colors.
Also, try lowering the resolution if you're doing 800 by 600. Again, some of these games, you might want to look at the back of the instructions and see what they recommend for resolution and color saturation.
And there's one other thing. Windows ME has at least a couple of updates for various graphic cards. You need to go up to NVIDIA's website and download the latest driver for your video card, because I know they've made at least two updates since ME came out, and if you just install the drivers that came in the box, they're really not the right one.
And you should probably go to Dell's website to get the drivers for the computer, and then Microsoft's website to get the updates for ME itself.
Right. You need to update everything fairly regularly, particularly in ME.
But especially with games, on the side of the box, it will tell you what graphics cards it works best with, and quite often it won't work at all with another type of card.
Right. Okie doke.
Okay. On the box it says
Okay, well, honest, I'm sorry. We have to take a break now. Those are the things you need to do, and we're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons, me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. I'm going to have to give up on grammar. Or is that diction? There's a distinction, you know.
Could be.
That and data. Nobody uses either of those words correctly, contact and data. Anyway, we're back, and you can give us a call at the numbers you just heard, and you can join us. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Rob Linton, Reticent Rob, as we call him, is on the buttons, and we're talking to Jason from Rochester. Welcome, Jason.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very good. This is JPEG Jason. I'm a student at MCC here in Rochester. And like you guys, I love computers, and also like you guys, I love solving computer problems. Currently, I have two questions for you. One's hard and one's easy.
Yeah, give us an easy one and then hang up.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Let me start with the hard one because that's what's confronted me most recently. I have a Sony CD burner, and the max speed it burns at is 8x.
Okay.
I'm running it in 2000 Professional. And what I'm getting is when I'm writing to a CD, it goes to about 20%. And this is at the 8X setting. And then the CD drive opens and I get a buffer overflow problem. Now, what I tried doing was defragging the machine. And
buffer overflow?
That's correct.
Yeah.
I tried defragging the machine and I closed all the programs in the taskbar. And I also have 384 megs of PC-133 RAM. So I'm at a loss as to why I have to operate this burner at 4X.
It works at 4X, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I have exactly the same problem. Now, I do not have a Sony, but at work, my burner, which is also actually a 16X, doesn't burn higher than 4, and I'm on a gigahertz machine.
What interface is the drive?
It's on the primary or the secondary master. Is that what you're referring
to?
Yes,
it's an IDE. Yeah, because USB drives are limited to 4X by the speed of USB.
Now, here's what's really bothering me. Prior to me installing 2000 Professional, I was using the same burner on Windows 98.
And it worked fine.
And it worked fine at 8X. Sometimes I would have to defrag in order for it to work, but it worked fine.
Yeah, part of the problem is apparently Windows 2000, because like I said, I have exactly the same problem.
Are you using 2000 Pro also?
Yes. Hmm. Yeah. Now at home, I've got a 24X burner under XP, and I can burn a 24X all day long while I'm doing anything else I feel like doing.
Nice.
But under 2000 Professional, it was designed to be a business system. And in Microsoft's narrow view of business, you don't burn CDs in a business system.
So you really, it's in the programming language then.
Well, it's just that takes a really low priority in the system. And it's the way they've set it up. And there's not a lot you can do about it. You know, if you're lucky and you get the right set of drivers, whoever wrote the drivers did a better job. You might look for better drivers.
Look for better drivers, I was thinking.
But other than that, if you weren't lucky enough to get better drivers for 2000, then you're pretty well stuck.
Yeah, what burning software are you using?
I'm using Easy Creator 5.0 Platinum.
You're using the Platinum, so that should do everything.
Yeah. Right, and I'm using Nero, and it does.
You might want to try Nero.
Yeah.
Okay, that's another good idea. I'm just looking for anything else. Okay, here's my second issue, guys.
Real quick.
The processor and motherboard I'm using is a P3 550, and I want to now upgrade. I'm going to buy a CPU package over the internet to a Pentium 4 1.5. I want to know if I need to upgrade my power supply to
do
so.
Yes.
Okay, what's the recommended power supply to do that?
I would recommend at least a 400 watt.
And any idea what, I'd have to look at it probably, but any idea what kind of power supply I might be running now?
No, you'd have to pull it. What is it, a P3?
It's a P3 550, right?
Probably a 300.
So definitely go for the new power supply.
Yeah, no question.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. You guys are awesome. I love the show.
Thank you. That's what we like to hear. We're going to take a quick break. Be back in a couple of minutes. Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Reticent Rob Linton, and me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. I am Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Go! Oh!
come on!
And it's Reticent Rob Litton on the buttons, not saying a word. And
no, we got to get him on.
And
he's got
to
jump in.
What do you want me to say? I don't know anything about computers.
We're just wanting you to announce yourself.
So folks know that you actually do exist.
I do exist. I do the news at the top every hour, you know, tell people what's going on. You guys do the computer thing.
You just keep us away from those buttons.
I keep you away from the buttons. That's right.
There we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Rob Litton.
Yeah.
Hey! Okay, and now is a moment of anticlimax. We'll go back to the phones, and we're going to talk to Chris from Rochester.
Wait a minute, I got to get
Chris, what's
down.
Your question?
I don't know if you guys can help me, but I got my phone bill, my long-distance phone bill.
Uh-oh.
$70. It's never more than six. But anyways, I looked at the numbers, and they're all to New York City, and I called one, and it's a modem. When I call, I can tell it's a modem picking up. They start the day after I brought my computer home from having a new modem installed.
Do you use America Online?
No, I do not.
Yeah. Well, there goes that theory.
Okay,
there
so you had a new modem installed, and all of a sudden at night this thing's calling New York City.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, every time we would dial up, it was dialing this long-distance number to New York. About 10 of one number, then it switched to another 10 or 20 of another number. And I called the place that fixed it, that put the new modem in, and they're like, no way, we don't even plug it in online or anything. We just do a query to see if it's working. It's working. You get it back.
The first thing is anybody who sticks a modem in and doesn't dial up with it is an idiot. I'm sorry. But that's first. But let's go on from there.
Okay.
You want to go into your internet properties.
Well, I did
your dial-up properties and make sure that the right phone number is selected and now the right area code.
Right.
The reason I asked about AOL is that there was a problem when the area codes changed that a lot of AOL customers were suddenly dialing Buffalo by accident and getting a long-distance bill. Thousands of dollars.
So you did indeed go into your
properties.
You found it is the correct phone number and the correct area code, 585?
Well, now it is because I called my provider and we went in and switched it together.
Network.
The number that was on there was the number that was on my phone bill.
There's a couple of things that it could have been. If you're the service place didn't actually dial up, it probably wasn't them. But there are several Trojan horses and worms that change your dial-up properties to their own service.
This is what the guy told me that could have possibly happened. But it's just too strange that it started the day after I brought it home.
It's possible that they have a virus on their network, and when they plugged your machine in to work on it, you got infected.
What antivirus software are you running?
I believe it's Norton.
And when was the last time you updated it?
Busted!
Next contestant, please. Okay, Chris, you're the first buzzer of the day. I want you to know. Congratulations. You need to update it immediately, and you need to run a thorough scan of your network, because it is very possible that you have that Trojan.
Okay.
I would do, and whether or not you got it, they gave it to you, where it came from, Max Nix, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
The reality is you've got it. You need to fix it now.
Okay.
Okie doke.
So you definitely think that it couldn't have been there. Well, it could have.
Who knows? At this point in time, you've got to go from, you know, what you know is going on. You've corrected one issue. Now you've got to protect yourself and get that antivirus software updated.
What town was that service center in? Was it here in Rochester?
Yes.
Yeah, because what we do in our shop is if the customer doesn't have their own dial-up put in, we'll use ours in Rochester.
Right.
We wouldn't, you know, if I could see if you took it to New York to get it fixed, they would have put their own in New York.
Yeah.
Where was it dialing, just out of idle curiosity?
Well, the first 10 calls were to Brooklyn, and then it was New York, New York after that, and then it switched again, the number, but it was still New York, New York.
So do you know who it was?
A different area.
I mean, do you know if it was another internet service provider or some?
Well, I'm assuming it must be, but I
you
called.
You know, was it calling Miss Cleo?
You can go, there's a website that AT&T runs called Anywho.
Okay.
And one of the options there is a reverse lookup. You put in the phone number, and it tells you who owns that phone number.
Good idea. I did call my...
In fact, that works with any telephone number on your phone bill you don't recognize.
Right. Oh, okay.
We have to put that website up there for
It's funny because my long-distance service is through AOL, and they said that they could not look that number up. So,
I'm sorry. I beg your pardon. I shouldn't laugh at the technical support people in other places.
Oh, I was really.
I'm promising you someday 1-900 ask Nick. we're gonna set that up.
Do 900
the
sound bites.
Right. But, Chris, that's what you need to do. Get that antivirus software updated, run it, see what's going on. You may well find that you've got a couple of worms up on your system.
Okay, great. And that's anywho.com?
Yes.
Okay, great.
If you go to the Soundbites webpage off the 1180 webpage, we will have a link up there.
Oh, okay, cool.
It'll be up in just a few moments, assuming Steve can type.
It's up. It's there.
Now look over on the lower right-hand side of the webpage, and you'll see down towards the bottom, I heard this site on Soundbites, and it'll be listed there.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Thanks a lot, guys. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's what we like to hear. Our next caller is Ken from Nunday. Welcome, Ken. What's your question?
My question is a serious problem.
Uh-huh.
I'm unable to vote on the Soundbites webpage.
Oh, yeah. You have a modem, don't you?
You sure do.
Yeah, here's what happens.
Actually, it doesn't necessarily have to be a modem, but it's more common with
a modem. It's more common with a modem. Dave, you're about to knock your soda over because you got it lassoed there.
I'm vibrating.
And in the middle of talking to you, we'll just talk to each other. Not a problem, Ken. What happens is this. When you vote in the poll, in order to prevent people from just consistently clicking on and on and on to this thing, we're doing where we pull the IP address of the person who votes, and therefore you cannot vote twice from the same IP address. Unfortunately, what that means is that if somebody votes and you call in and they hang up and you call in and get the same modem, it's the modem that actually owns the IP address. So what you have to do is hope that at some point you call in during a busy time and get a modem that has not been used to vote in the poll, and then you can vote. And I apologize for that, but there is no other way to do it that doesn't, you know, stick cookies on everybody's site and or let them vote 100 million times in the poll. And
one trick you can do is if you have two phone lines with your regular voice phone, call your internet provider, and that makes the modem busy. Then tell your computer to dial, and it uses the next modem.
Yeah, well, I don't have two phone lines.
That was a
call
a
up a friend and have them call and wait 30 seconds and dial in.
I thought it was a problem with my reinstalling Netscape on a brand new computer.
Let's back up a second. When you see the poll on the website, is it already voted
all
on?
Filled in. Yeah,
yeah, okay. That's it. That's the reason.
Yeah, so it's not that you try to vote and it doesn't let you. It's already filled in.
I thought maybe it was a gateway problem.
No, I'm sorry, Ken. The reality is there is no perfect way to figure out who's voted, and this is the one of the many imperfect methods we pick.
I have to cry to my provider.
Well, unless you end up with some sort of broadband thing that lets you keep your IP address fairly regularly, then there's nothing they can do about
it.
Unless
you hang,
dedicate a modem to you, and they will if you pay them enough money.
Yeah.
If you hang up, wait a while, dial again, you'll get a different modem, which may have a different address, which may not have been voted yet.
I've tried six times with zone alarm on and off.
The other trick is...
Yeah, no, zone alarm has nothing to do with it.
Nick usually posts the poll about...
Midnight.
Midnight, 1 in the morning.
No, midnight. Well, what I do is, Gabe wrote this great poll. Let's not get started on Gabe's poll, but Gabe wrote this great poll, and I can set it up weeks ahead of time if I want to, and then at midnight... The Friday to Saturday midnight, it will come up.
Right. So
if we go anywhere.
No, if we get folks to sit there and give ideas, I mean,
that's right. We're getting mine are lame. We need somebody else to come up with.
No,
it.
So if you dial in at like 12:01, you should be guaranteed to be the first person on your modem bank to be able to vote.
Right.
Well, but, unfortunately, I guess I'm not.
I am sorry.
I've tried both polls.
Well, yeah,
I wanted to vote on the other one.
Yeah, I know. I am sorry. I don't have a perfect way of doing it. Thanks anyway, though. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton, me, Nick Francesco, on the universe's longest-running computer call-in radio show, Soundbites. Yes. Yes, it's true. We've done this in a chat room, and actually, we prefer to do it live. Eh? You get
really
down to it. We prefer talking to you on the phone. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
Yeah, it's Rob Linton.
Yeah, he's over there.
Yeah, he doesn't care. We're talking to Chip from Shalott. Welcome, Chip. What's your question? Chip, are you there? Hello, Chip.
We're going to have to get Rob back on.
Hello.
Are you there?
There we go.
Can you hear me?
Yep. I can. Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Great. Can you hear me now? Go ahead. What's your question?
That's another company.
Where'd you
go ahead. What's your question?
Can you hear me?
Yes. Go.
Hello.
What's your question, Chip?
Okay, I've got two easy questions for you, real quick ones. Yeah. The first one is easy. The second one is easier.
Yeah.
We'll yes and no. Yes and no.
And it depends.
Okay, good. I have, I do my banking online.
Yeah.
And in order to get it on, you have to type in your bank card number, then give yourself a screen name and type in your PIN number.
Mm-hmm. Right.
No big deal. However, every time I go to clean up my hard drive and I delete all my temporary files,
right,
internet files, that goes.
Sure.
I have to do the whole thing all over again.
Right.
Okay, that's normal?
That is not only normal, it's the way it's supposed to work.
It's actually...
There's no way to save it anywhere else.
Well, don't delete that file, but there's no way to know which one it is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
If you were to immediately, after clearing your cache, go online to that thing, you might be able to figure out which cookie it is.
Right.
But the reality is that it's unlikely, and in the long run, you could run into trouble playing around
with
that.
It's a minor inconvenience, but it's better for security reasons.
Right.
Anyway.
In fact, we had mentioned it earlier in the show that it is a security issue that someone could walk up to your computer, go into your cookies, and find your banking information.
Gotcha.
Right.
Gotcha. I hate it when people get into my cookies.
No, nothing worse than that.
Oh, God. So the second one is I've been listening for about 35 minutes now, and I haven't heard the website address. Could you please?
Soundbites.org.
How do you spell the soundbites?
Correctly. Thank you.
Thank you.
SOUNDBYTES. That's soundbites with a Y. Soundbites.org. And that's the name of the show, and it's the name of the soundbites. And it's the name of the place you need to be online. Our next caller, Tim from Irondequoit. Welcome, Tim. What's your question?
Hello, 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 guys.
Hi there.
I appreciate your help. You've helped me before, and it's always been good. I get emails 3, 4, sometimes up as many times, just 10 times a day. It's a worm, and I cannot block this stupid thing. There's nothing in the thumb line.
Yeah.
Anything I could do with that thing?
What is your antivirus what is your email program?
I'm using Outlook and I use Norton.
Yeah, the problem is that Outlook doesn't have a lot of really good filters. What you need to do, what you really want to be able to do is say if the from is blank.
Right.
I don't honestly know if you can do that in Outlook because, of course, we don't have our own systems in here because there's nowhere to plug them in, so we're using the systems that are in here, and they have no software on them.
No, they don't have one for if it's blank.
Yeah. In that case, unless they're all coming from the same person...
Oh, it's the same thing over and over and over.
Well, you should be able to trap the subject line or the...
There is no subject line.
There's no subject. There's nothing. It just comes in and...
The headers are there, but it's not displaying them in the from and to.
If there's no subject, and you're right. You can, if there is the same information in the body, or if it's coming from the same person, you should be able to set that up. But you're right, Outlook is a little sparse in the amount of stuff that it lets you do in a filter. Outlook, of course, to actually defend Microsoft, Outlook is designed only to work with Exchange, and the theory is you would be using the more robust tools on the server, on Exchange server, to block that sort of thing before it ever got to the client. So Outlook doesn't need to have... those kinds of filters. If you were using a program like Eudora, there's nothing you can't filter against. But in Outlook, you're pretty limited. And I'm sorry, unless you can identify something in the body to check all the time or whatever.
It's the same body. It's the same thing every time.
Well, then select a line that would be uncommon in any other email and say if the body contains.
Yeah, okay.
And that's about all you can do.
Okay,
the other thing is that your antivirus software should catch the message before it gets displayed and quarantine it ahead of time.
Oh, it does it, but it asks me, do I want to quarantine this? Every time I download, I got to go through this sometimes 4 or 5 times.
You can change the preferences in Norton to automatically quarantine instead of asking you every time.
Yeah, it says it tries to fix it and it can't, and then it says, do you want to quarantine?
Right, yeah, there's options are to fix automatically, quarantine automatically, ask me what to do.
Or delete.
Or delete. Change that to quarantine automatically.
Or delete it.
Or delete
and
it.
Or delete it automatically and you won't hear it anymore.
Yep. Yeah, I'll try to ignore it. I didn't think of that.
Yep. Yeah, and in fact, if you're just quarantining it, you may have hundreds of copies on your hard drive.
Oh, I'm sure I do, and it's just very irritating.
Delete would be better.
Good luck.
Now, How did I get that in the first place? I
mean, you didn't. It's coming from somebody else. They've got the virus, and they're sending it out. You're in their email address somewhere.
Yeah. In Outlook. Again, that's how 90% of the viruses are being spread around, is through Outlook.
Okay, right. Guys. Thanks.
Thanks. But our next caller is Gary from Perry. Welcome, Gary from Perry.
Good afternoon. You guys are addictive.
Thank you so much.
I spend so much time now that I've got a DSL thing on your the Soundbites forums and so forth. I'm
love
really enjoying
it. Love to hear that. Thank you. Love
super
to hear that.
See, I get stuck now with the Soundbites forums, the Ask Nick forums, the Apple Cider forums. I'm never offline anymore.
Right. I've got the gloating dance to add.
My
that,
wife
so
accuses me of the same thing. So I did put in DSL the last couple of weeks, mm-hmm. and in preparation for that, and with a little bit of paranoia, I wanted to make sure I had Firewall and the newest version of virus scans and so forth.
Right.
And I found a McAfee Internet Security package, which seemed to include all those things.
Yep.
Did I make a mistake by putting the whole package in?
Yep, a mistake, yeah, kind of. Really, all you need is the firewall and the antivirus. All the rest of it it just takes
sound
up room and can damage and can actually get in the way of other things.
Well, and for the firewall issue, are you using your own router or just the DSL router?
Just the modem, the DSL modem.
Okay. Well, yeah, it's not really a modem. But
right, but that's
issue,
all right.
Right.
The thing is, you should definitely run only the firewall and the antivirus.
Right. The other issue is that you can buy your own router, which lets you share your internet connection among multiple computers, and it contains a hardware firewall.
Right, in fact, so, I'm thinking about that.
Right. You can get them for, you know, $50-$60 if you have a hub, or one with a built-in hub is like $100. And then you can share the internet. It has a hardware firewall and works better than trying to run software on your computer.
Okay.
It doesn't do a lot of the logging that the software would, but you know, who cares if someone tries to attack you as long as they're blocked, because there's nothing you can do about it anyway.
Right.
Well, of course, I'm learning how to use it too, and at first right. I thought the McAfee firewall was part of the problem that I was having with the computer. I mean, a lot of hang-ups.
What I would the recommend biggest problem that people run into when they install a firewall is they block themselves from getting to where they want to go.
Right. You can actually set a firewall so tight that you can't get through it. Usually there are settings, high, medium, low.
Right.
Start at medium. High essentially says, I don't want anybody going in, going out, doing nothing. I don't want anybody anywhere on this machine.
Okay.
So if you start at medium and you find you're having a little bit of a problem, then you can deal with adding or removing things. You might also want to take a look at removing the firewall from McAfee and loading something like Zone Alarm.
I did. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, you see, you don't need both.
No, I completely took away the firewall from McAfee.
All right.
The one thing a personal firewall does is black outgoing.
We got to go. I want to thank you very much. We'll be back next Saturday at 12:20. We'll also be here Friday at
This Thursday, we're going to be at the convention center from 11 to 2.
Right, and this Thursday will be next Friday for 7 o'clock on our news. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Redis and Rob Linton on the buttons. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll see you next Saturday on Soundbites, only on 1180 WHAM.